Most people don't have enlightened masters, he said with a slight sigh, as if the fact troubled him, so they only experience a limited amount of light when they practice meditation. But a person who wants to progress more rapidly and wishes to overcome unhappiness sooner should try to find an enlightened master. If a person is serious about not just being a little bit happier, and if that person wants to become enlightened and experience infinite happiness, then he or she must study with an enlightened master. No one on this earth attains enlightenment anymore without an enlightened master as a guide. Unless, of course, that person was enlightened in many previous incarnations. Master Fua paused and looked directly into my eyes. The golden light was still filling the air between us. I felt my awareness change, and I simultaneously felt a strange tingling sensation at the top of my head. After staring into my eyes for several minutes, he resumed speaking. This is the hardest thing in the universe to understand, he said with a happy laugh. You must look beyond my words in order to know what I am talking about. You need to experience the reality of light yourself in your own meditation, only then will you really understand how perfect life is. Then, of course, you will be happy forever. But Master Fuap, how can a person be happy in a world in which there is so much injustice and unhappiness? Everyone and everything dies. And there is so much pain and useless suffering in everyone's lives. How can meditation and enlightenment change all of that? I agree with you, Master Fuap said warmly. The world of human experience is very uncertain. Today you will be happy and then tomorrow you will be unhappy. Today you may get what you want and tomorrow you may not. Today you are young and filled with energy, and in the future you will grow old, and may become very tired. Only the enlightened are consistently happy, because their happiness is not predicated upon the events and experiences that take place in this world. Instead, it is based upon the boundless inner energy they gain from their connection with the world of enlightenment. Master Fuap defines astral travel. Beyond this world are countless dimensions. They stretch on forever. You can travel to them and have experiences in them. Some astral dimensions are bright and filled with ecstasy. Advanced cosmic beings live in them. But there are also very dark astral dimensions that are filled with pain and confusion. They are often inhabited by beings that are filled with hate and despair. The experiences that you have in astral dimensions are not essentially all that different from the experiences you have here in the physical dimension, in the sense that they are also transient. Some people make the mistake of assuming that it is always better somewhere else. But life is more or less the same wherever you go, because wherever you go, there you are. I mention this to you only because so many people seem to confuse the experience of meditation and enlightenment with astral travel. Some people travel to other dimensions in their astral bodies when they meditate. But astral traveling doesn't bring a person lasting happiness. As a matter of fact, if astral traveling is not done properly, it can be quite dangerous. It is an adversarial world outside the safety of nirvana and enlightenment. In life, all beings need to feed on other beings just in order to exist. Some beings also like to cause others to needlessly suffer, just out of pure maliciousness. Just because you go to another dimension doesn't mean that things will be happier or better there for you. Actually, things may be much more difficult. There are many different forms of life in the universe, Master Fuap continued, with a tone of warning in his voice, and human beings are unaware of most of them. As you know, one small virus can take away your physical life. And as you have also learned, there are dangerous people and situations in life that you need to avoid simply to go on living, let alone to achieve happiness and perfect enlightenment. It has taken many years of your life just for you to learn how to successfully negotiate many of the physical dangers of the day-to-day world. Learning to cross a street in traffic or turning down unacceptable or suspicious invitations from strangers are things you do that you now take for granted. But when you were first born, you didn't know about these dangers and how to deal with them. You learned about them from your parents, your teachers at school, and through other experiences you have had. The point I am making is that enlightenment is not interdimensional travel, Master Fuap said in a strong tone. Enlightenment is the experience of pure light. I have nothing against interdimensional travel. As a matter of fact, I do it freely. But I learned to do it safely and correctly from my master, Fawaz Shastradup. What is interdimensional travel like? I asked. Master Fawab had finally brought up a topic that sounded intriguing to me. Interdimensional travel is similar to traveling from one country to another, he replied. Sometimes it is refreshing and elevating, and sometimes it is tiring and dangerous. But it certainly should not be confused with the experience of nirvana and enlightenment. Unlike the experience of nirvana, traveling to other dimensions will not take you beyond suffering, nor will it help you to experience the limitless ecstasy of creation. As a matter of fact, interdimensional travel has nothing to do with enlightenment at all. If you are enlightened, you can experience ecstasy in any dimension and at any time, Master Fawab exclaimed. Enlightenment is not related to where your physical or astral body may be, or to any experiences that you may be having with them. Enlightenment is beyond dimensionality. If it wasn't, it wouldn't provide permanent liberation from sorrow. It would only be another transient experience that eventually would culminate in sorrow, as all other human experiences eventually do. That is why enlightenment is really worth seeking, Master Fawab stated emphatically. It is the only thing that gives you permanent happiness. When you experience the ecstasy, peace and perfection of the endless and formless light of enlightenment, everything is all right. You are happy and free, you know life. Once you are enlightened, you can do whatever you want without fear or sorrow. You can choose to have a career or live in a monastery, you can go snowboarding, get married, stay single, be rich and famous, or live unknown in a high Himalayan cave. It is up to you. When your mind is flooded with the pure light of nirvana, which is happiness itself, you will be delighted with whatever occurs to you. But without enlightenment, everything in life is harsh. Sooner or later you see everyone you love die, unless you die first, of course. This causes you to suffer. But when you are enlightened, you see and understand that nothing and no one really dies, Master Fawab continued. At the moment of death, a being simply changes forms. When you are enlightened, you know that everything and everyone, including yourself, is eternal. Armed with this knowledge, you no longer fear death or feel as much sorrow when those you love die. Once you have personally experienced enlightenment, you will see beyond the ocean of death to the everlasting shores of immortality. When you are enlightened and have united your mind with the deepest and the most ancient part of the mind of the universe, you are not affected by suffering the way other people are. Naturally, your physical body will still feel pain if you get hurt. But you will not be overwhelmed even by extreme physical pain, because your mind will be filled with light, love and understanding. Master Fawab paused and closed his eyes. As he did, the golden light that filled the air between us suddenly became more solid. I couldn't see Master Fawab, or anything else in the room for that matter. It was as if I had joined Master Fawab in a dimension of solid gold light. Nothing seemed to matter to me anymore. My mind had an unbroken continuity with all of creation. I was at peace. Then Master Fawab spoke to me. It seemed as if his voice came from afar. At first I was only vaguely aware that he was speaking. Then I became fully aware of what he was saying to me. Because of your karma from your past lives, you will become enlightened in this lifetime. You have been enlightened in a number of. But first you must prepare yourself. You must learn to meditate and stop your thoughts. You must overcome all egotism and selfishness by serving others. You must cleanse your mind so that enlightenment will find a happy place to reside there. I listened to what Master Fawab said that day about enlightenment. His words touched something very deep within me. I knew, after he had spoken, that what mattered most in life was to be as aware as he was, to be enlightened. I don't think I consciously understood most of what he said to me that day. But as he talked, I could sense the light and the wisdom that was behind his words. Somehow I could feel that he was in touch with the most perfect part of existence, and that was enough for me. His reference to my future didn't really have much of an effect on me. He was talking about how I had been in past lives that I couldn't remember, and about what was going to happen to me in a future that hadn't yet occurred. I heard his words, but I don't think I particularly believed them, nor did I disbelieve them. Saying I was enlightened in the past and that I would be enlightened again in the future was something for which I simply didn't have any reference point. It was simply out of my league. Master Fuap's reflections upon enlightenment, the visible golden light I had seen around him, and the way it had transported my mind into a world of perfect feelings, emotions and understandings did affect me quite profoundly that day. Without my knowing how or why, I simply knew what he had told me was true. Master Fuap answered a few more questions I had about enlightenment, and then suddenly it was sunset. Somehow, without my noticing it, the golden light had vanished from the room, and the two of us were sitting together in silence. The tea had grown cold. Master Fuap left me at the entrance to his temple and I walked back to the hostel along the narrow streets of Kathmandu. As I walked, everything I saw seemed to glow and give off wave-like vibrations of light, not as bright as the light I had witnessed around Master Fuap, but more subtle and subdued. Looking at the buildings as I passed by them, I could see they were really made up of dancing particles of energy. I now knew that the world wasn't really as solid as it looked. Walking along the cold dark streets of Kathmandu, I didn't feel very physical. Instead, I felt as if I was pure motion, a feeling I have experienced both before and since, when, on rare occasions, I have been snowboarding without any self-consciousness. I slept well that night, and dreamt of snow falling in the Himalayas. Chapter 12, You Are the Board. I didn't see Master Fuap for the rest of the week. During that time I reflected on our conversations about enlightenment, while I hiked up and snowboarded down ice and snow-covered Himalayan peaks. Each morning I would hitch a ride to the mountains and climb up a snow-covered pass. Then I would snowboard down the mountain, climb back up, and do it again. When I had said goodbye to Master Fuap at his temple door, he hadn't indicated where or when we would meet again, but I knew somehow that we would. I decided to stick to my snowboarding and leave the when and where of our next encounter up to him. 6 days after our parting, I unexpectedly met him again on the top of a mountain. That day I had spent 3 hours climbing up a particularly gnarly pass in search of perfect snow. After reaching the top of the pass, I had collapsed in a heap of exhaustion. As I lay on my back in the cold snow, heavily breathing the thin mountain air in and out of my lungs, I closed my eyes and listened to the pounding of my heart. Then, quite unexpectedly, I felt a presence, as if someone was staring at me. I opened my eyes, and much to my amazement, Master Fuap was standing right above me. He was looking down at me with a big "I know something you don't know" smile on his face. Noiselessly, he sat down next to me. I lay on top of the snow-covered mountain peak, panting from exhaustion, breathlessly unable to convey my amazement at our unexpected meeting. A few minutes later, after I had finally caught my breath, I voiced my surprise. "Master Fuap, what are you doing up here? Of all the possible mountains in the Himalayas, how could you have known that I would be on top of this one? When did you get here? Did you follow me up, or were you already here?" "I have been waiting for you for a little over an hour," Master Fuap quickly replied. "Since this is a just right mountain for this day, and since I have just right karma, I knew that you would show up here." Before I could interrupt and ask more questions, he continued, "Today I am going to teach you the art of living correctly. To live correctly, naturally you have to act correctly. Living is acting and acting is living. When the two become one, your life will be perfect." The Ray Quartz Fuap's method of learning to live correctly is through the perfection of all your actions. If you can perfect any one thing that you do, then you will experience and know what perfect living is, in that particular action. Once you have accomplished the perfection of one particular action, it will then be relatively easy for you to transfer that knowledge to some other actions you perform, and eventually you will be able to perfect everything you do. "It really doesn't matter which action I teach you to perfect first," he continued. "Any action will do, since the basic principles involved for perfecting any one action are the same for all actions. I have decided to teach you to perfect the action that you enjoy most, he said with a mischievous smile on his face. I have come up to the top of this peak today to teach you how to go down this mountain on your snowboard perfectly. Master Fuap had trapped me and I knew it. While reincarnation and the secret doctrines of a tantric Buddhist mystery school didn't really matter very much to me, snowboarding did. Snowboarding was everything to me. As unlikely as it seemed that Master Fuap could teach me how to snowboard perfectly, I decided right then and there that if he could, I would definitely become his disciple. I immediately sat up and paid attention. I didn't want to miss a word he said. To do something perfectly, you must not think about what you are doing at all, he stated in a strong and formal tone. Your thoughts are what create imperfections in your actions. They alienate you from the true reality of any action you perform. Thoughts should have a place in your life, of course, but it should be a very small place. To really know something, in order to see its perfection and to become part of that perfection, you must become the action that you seek to perfect. This will not be hard for you to understand if you look at any one of your actions. For example, you go down the mountain riding through the snow on your board. Your progression through the snow depends upon both your skill in using your board and your knowledge of the mountain and its snow. If you know what your board will do on different types of snow, and on different types of terrain, and if you and your board are one, you will perform this action of going down the mountain on your snowboard perfectly. But I already know how to do that, Master Fuap. I'm sure there is much more to learn, but so far I have been able to successfully snowboard down every mountain that I have ever tried. Yes, you are accomplished, Master Fuap responded. I have been watching you without your knowledge for the past several days. Yes, it is true. You are quite accomplished, but you are still far from perfecting your snowboarding. I respected Master Fuap's thoughts, and I really didn't mind the idea that he had been spying on me for the past several days, although I wasn't sure if I believed that he really had been watching me, but I still didn't see how he could be in a position to teach me how to snowboard perfectly. Since he wasn't an experienced snowboarder himself, I silently reasoned, how could he possibly know more about snowboarding than I did? Master Fuap must have been reading my thoughts because he immediately addressed my concerns. You are wondering how I can show you how to do something perfectly, when you are the expert and I am the novice. There are two reasons, the first is that I am enlightened, and the second is that I know the principles of perfect action. Because I am enlightened, I can directly see the essence of anything I choose, he said with a happy laugh. I can know its perfection with just a little bit of study. Additionally, since I know the principles of perfect action in other activities, I can transfer those principles to snowboarding or any other activity I choose. Let me show you, he continued. May I borrow your board? I handed Master Fuap my snowboard. I didn't understand how he was going to use it, since he didn't have the proper boots. Master Fuap didn't seem to care. He stepped onto my snowboard and, giving himself a little push in the snow with his right foot to get started, he began his descent down the mountain. I was sure that once Master Fuap started down the mountain and saw the severity of the slope that lay ahead of him, he would hop off my snowboard. We were on top of a Himalayan mountain. The slope was almost completely vertical. I wasn't even sure if I could safely make it down this particular mountain. With all the experience I had in my command, if I was unsure about snowboarding down this particular mountain, how could Master Fuap possibly do it and survive? I turned and watched nervously as Master Fuap rode my snowboard over the edge of the peak and began his perilous journey straight down the mountain slope. I kept expecting Master Fuap to hop off the board. But there, already several hundred feet below me, was Master Fuap, riding my snowboard perfectly and gracefully down the mountain, without even the right boots to help him. I had never seen anything like it in my life. He rode my snowboard as if he had been doing it for years. His form was perfect. I found myself laughing out loud as I watched him masterfully cut in and out of the deep powder. About halfway down the mountain, Master Fuap took a very high jump and he and my board shot straight off the mountain. At first I thought there was no way he could survive the jump. He had gone straight out over a precipice, and there was nothing but several thousand feet of very thin air between himself and the icy ridge that lay below him. For a moment he just hung in the air, suspended by the momentum from his jump. I knew that in only a few seconds gravity would change his trajectory, and he would fall to his certain death on the rocky ridge below. And then the most incredible thing happened. Master Fuap and my board started to rise up in the air and come back up the mountain. I watched dumbfounded as he flew through the air straight back up to the top of the mountain where I was standing. He was levitating. It was incredible. I didn't fully believe my eyes until he returned to the summit and was standing right next to me, calmly handing me back my snowboard. "Master Fuap," I exclaimed. "How did you do that?" "It was easy," he replied with a slight smile. "I simply became one with the board. I became the board. That is how I was able to go down the mountain without falling." "Yes, that was amazing," I admitted, "and your form was perfect. But that's not what I meant. How did you fly through the air and get back up here? You levitated. How did you do that?" "Oh, that," he replied, without any sense of pride or accomplishment in his voice. "A little more complicated to explain, I'm afraid. My master, Fuaz Shastradup, taught me how to do it, but it requires many years of effort to perfect the technique. It was a useful way for Buddhist masters to travel great distances before the invention of the automobile and aircraft. But these days it is much easier to drive a car or to buy a ticket and fly on a plane than it is to learn how to travel that way," he said with a hearty laugh. "I am afraid that in the modern world it is no longer worth the effort to learn the technique. But it is impressive when you see it for the first time, isn't it?" "Yes," I replied, still dumbfounded by what I had just witnessed. "Master Fuap, would you teach me how to do that?" "I could," he replied, "but as I said before, it takes many years to perfect the technique. It is much easier to travel the modern way. Now I travel mostly by car or plane." "But Master Fuap," I protested, "it would be very useful for snowboarding the Himalayas and other inaccessible mountains. I spend half a day just hiking up the mountain in order to get a 15 to 20 minute ride down." "The exercise is good for you," he responded with a broad smile and another laugh. "And as I said, it is no longer worth the effort involved to learn the technique. But while I won't teach you how to levitate today, I will show you how to accomplish an action perfectly. I just did all of this to show you that I am qualified to teach you snowboarding. Did I convince you?" He paused and looked at me seriously for a moment. I didn't know what to say at first. Then I replied, "But of course you did, I'm convinced. But do I have to shave my head and put on an ochre-colored robe in order to learn from you?" "No, definitely not," he exclaimed. "I'm afraid my Buddhist method of dress is not appropriate for a Western student of Tantric Buddhist yoga. It is best for you to dress naturally, the way you currently do, and keep your hair any way you like. I am afraid that the significance of the traditional Buddhist way of appearing would not have a positive effect for you in your Western culture. It would be misunderstood, and you would be laughed at and made fun of. What is the cultural significance of your appearance to someone who grew up here in the East, Master Fuap?" "It is difficult to explain to someone who has not grown up in a Buddhist or Hindu society," he replied. "Let me just say that the Buddhist manner of dress and appearance creates respect for anyone who is a monk. It is well understood by members of my society that monks or masters are not ordinary persons. They have chosen to do a very difficult thing, to follow the pathway to enlightenment. In my culture, the brightest and the most adventuresome youths have traditionally taken this path. Here in the East, studying yoga is comparable to a mixture of attending one of your best Western universities, like Harvard or Oxford, and of being an intrepid explorer, like one of your astronauts who travels into the far away, unexplored regions of outer space. In the East, it is taken for granted that the training of a monk is physically rigorous and academically challenging," Master Fuap continued to explain. "As a monk, you learn to totally develop your mind, overcome all fears, be spontaneous and creative, and most importantly, you learn to be able to go into unknown dimensions of the mind, and successfully return both ennobled and humbled by your journeys into the center of the universe. Dressing in the traditional Buddhist way would not transmit respect to you in the West. In the West, Buddhist monks are thought of as oddities. Most Westerners believe we are the remnants of an impoverished third world society, upholding beliefs that have been outmoded by contemporary science. That is, I am afraid, the stereotypical view of the Eastern monk. He has a shaved head, wears an ochre robe, and is no longer relevant to the contemporary world. That is the view as seen through round Western eyes. For you, it is better to dress the way you do now and practice your yoga. In your society, people are impressed by PhD degrees, money and fame. I recommend that you attain all three and diligently practice your yoga. Then someday, when you teach our ancient practices of yoga to Western youths, you will be respected and admired. Then, because you will be wealthy, famous and have a PhD, the young students in the West will listen to what you have to say about tantric Buddhist yoga with great interest. I didn't know what to say in response to Master Fuap's remarks. I hadn't even decided whether or not I wanted to go to college, let alone get a PhD. I also thought that my chances of becoming rich and famous were pretty small, unless snowboarding suddenly became an Olympic sport, and I could endorse athletic products or something. I waited in silence for him to resume our conversation about snowboarding. The secret to doing anything perfectly is to practice and to become, Master Fuap continued. That is all that there is to it, really. You must practice to learn about something. You must practice to get a feeling, a sense of the range of possibilities and the possible experiences that something can afford you. To a certain degree, you have already accomplished this with your board. But what you have not learned so far is how to become and to be. That is the next step in your inner education. You still see yourself as being separate from your actions, Master Fuap explained. This, however, is untrue. If you could see inwardly through your third eye, the way I can, then you would know that inwardly you are one with all things, all actions, all inactions and all spheres of possible being. Nirvana, enlightenment, is all there really is. Its power is everywhere and in everything. Your eyes cannot see it, your ears cannot hear it, your nose cannot smell it, your tongue cannot taste it, your body cannot grasp and feel it, but it is there, nevertheless. Nirvana and enlightenment exist just on the other side of your sensory perceptions and your thoughts. To do something perfectly, you must hook yourself to the power of the second attention and nirvana, Master Fuap said. Once you can do that, almost nothing is impossible, whether it is levitating, snowboarding perfectly or being enlightened. You come to know all of this through meditating. He continued, in meditation, when your thoughts are stopped, you become empty. When you are empty, your mind folds back on itself and you see through the illusions of the material world. Things are not always as they appear. The world you see around you appears to be solid. But in reality, as any physicist will tell you, the physical world is made of moving energy. All matter is energy. But Master Fuap, I protested, I still don't understand any of this. How can you break a physical law like you just did when you flew up the mountain? Master Fuap laughed in response, and grinned at me. It is because I have the knowledge of the non-physical dimensions at my disposal. I step in and out of those dimensions, and use them to do things here in this world that would otherwise be impossible. The astral dimensions, when you have been properly instructed by a master in how to enter them, leave them, and deal with them, afford you opportunities to have experiences and gain insights into the structural nature of how dimensions are made up and phased together. The astral is the supporting ground for the physical dimension. Your understanding of the astral dimensions, Master Fuap continued in a formal tone, as if he were presenting a paper before a scientific committee, can help you alter structures in the physical dimensions. It is in and through the medium of the astral dimensions that all of the siddha powers function and work. You can move in and through the astral worlds once you have gained control of your subtle body, he said with tremendous energy. Remember, the astral worlds are the back corridors of eternity. Beyond the astral dimensions are the causal dimensions, Master Fuap continued. The causal dimensions are not spatial or time-oriented. They are the planes of light, and they make up the outer limits of Nirvana.